came with strips later. There's when it doesn't work, then things happen in the hive. And so what is going on in the hive, if more of the chemicals being put in different formulations that can add other...
just on random variation if you formed groups from the single bees. And also notice that the high-frequency excavator performed a similar amount of excavation as bees that were on their own, whereas the low-frequency excavator performed this task much less frequently. So these differences occurred across other tasks as well. Pushing tamping was similar in that high-frequency excavators performed more pushing tamping, and they were similar to single bees. However, for gatekeeping, it was the low-frequency excavator that tended to perform more gatekeeping. So here we have a division of labor between excavation and pushing tamping on the one hand, and the other individual tended to perform mostly gatekeeping. And again, there were no differences in activity among these groups, so differences in task performance cannot simply be attributed to overall activity levels. And the final results are the survival curves for the single bees, high and low frequency excavators, with cumulative proportion surviving on the y-axis. And overall survival was pretty high over 16 days in these lab conditions. The scale here only goes down to 0.5. And there were no significant differences between any of these groups. And if anything, there was a tendency for the low-frequency excavators to have lower survival, which would be the opposite of what we predicted if we thought the excavation was costly. We know from the ants that it can cause desiccation or it's energetically expensive, but that doesn't seem to be happening here. So in conclusion, I'll return to those three questions I posed earlier. First, when you form groups from a normally solitary Lasioglossum, you get increased per capita guarding and increased overall excavation. And this gatekeeping or guarding behavior is particularly interesting because it's been proposed as a major benefit of social nesting in these halictene bees. We did find divisional labor in this system, even though there's no history of social evolution. And it does indeed appear to be generated by the social dynamics rather than just random variation. I don't have time to go into the mechanisms here, and this study did not directly address those, but other work we've done has found support for both response threshold variation and spatial separation induced by intolerance to passing one another. So these components of divisional labor are in place, even though the system has not evolved in a social context. And finally, we did not find any survival costs to excavation in this system. And in nature, tasks such as foraging and guarding are probably a lot more risky. So those are important to look at to determine kind of the fitness cost of divisional labor in these communal, or in systems that evolve to be communal, although again, this is a normally solitary system. And that's all I have. I'd like to thank these people and organizations and be happy to answer questions. Thank you.
Okay, we have 1 minute left for questions.
Yes.
Your sea foster response, is there any chance that that could be associated with inter-individual aggression, or the way you observe that, was it clear that it was a true guarding behavior or a defense of the net?
Well, we did an assay for inter-individual aggression. I didn't explain it here. We did some circle tube assays, and these bees are really not aggressive towards one another at all. Very rarely do they show aggression towards conspecifics. So we feel pretty comfortable that it is a guarding response, although we cannot be sure. That's why I've called it gatekeeping, just to be a little safer. But it's a good point. Yes? We did. Unfortunately, they would not forage and would not lay eggs in this lab setup that we have here. In this study, I did not dissect them, but in another, we dissected the bees afterwards to look at their ovary development, and there were no differences between the different task specializations and reproductive development. So there doesn't seem to be any dominance either reproductively or through overt aggression in this system.
All right.
Thank you.
As Alejandro had said, the original title of my presentation was Honeybee Nurses differentiate between larvae based on nutritional status. On further reflection, I decided that that title is a little over sensational, and I'd like to revise that title to say, honeybee nurses differentially attend larvae based on rearing environment differences. Now, honeybee colony consists of a single queen who is usually the mother of all other members, including several thousand semi-sterile daughters and thousands of immature stages termed brood. Honeybee workers exhibit division of labor, most prominently between bees that forage outside the nest and bees that work within the nest. An important within-nest task is brood care, carried out by nurses. Brood are collectively the eggs, larvae, and pupae that make up the honeybee immature stages. The larval stage is the only immature stage that feeds. Nurses use proteins derived from pollen to produce glandular secretions that are progressively provisioned to developing larvae. And these larvae, they'll grow approximately 650 times over 5 to 6 days and are entirely dependent on these nurse bees for food and care. In this study, nurse behaviors that were observed were inspection and feeding. What occurs within the cell is largely a black box, as we cannot observe feeding directly, and therefore an inspection we define as the nurse inserting her head and thorax, and at least partial thorax, into the larval cell for 2 to 3 seconds, whereas feeding is defined as doing this activity for longer than 3 seconds. Now, deprivation of nurses may lead to changes in larval nutritional state. So, as this frequency diagram of 125 observed individual larvae borrowed from Ramestagili's 2007 PhD dissertation data indicates, the range sum of total feeding duration of unmanipulated larvae within a single hour of observation is very wide. A question this then raises is whether this variation is a consequence of random attention from the nurses, or instead a consequence of nurses differentially compensating for larval requirement. So my study then had two objectives. The first tested the hypothesis that nurses differentially attend deprived and control groups of larvae. We tested this in the observation hive, where we presented nurses with larvae that were deprived of nurses for 4 hours alongside equivalent larvae that were not so deprived. The second objective was tested in the lab, where we generated a bioassay to test the hypothesis that larval chemical cues from deprived larvae were more attractive to nurses than controls. So, for the observation hive experiment, 6 approximately equal colonies were installed into 4 frame observation hives. 1 week after colonies were installed, side-by-side areas of approximately 500 fourth instar larvae were covered with 13 by 13 centimeter cages made of wire mesh. We used 2 sizes of wire mesh, 0.5 centimeter and 3 centimeter. The 3 centimeter allowed unrestricted adult bee access, labeled here as control, while the 0.5 centimeter deprived larvae of all adult bee contact. We caged these larvae for 4 hours, and the frames were then cleared of bees with small puffs of smoke, and the cages were removed. Each area of control and deprived larvae was then recorded for a single hour. Larvae present over each area were then counted, and the bees present on each area were counted every 5 minutes. Seen here are representative images taken at 35 minutes. We used contingency table analysis to test the hypothesis that the proportion of bees to larvae was significantly greater in deprived versus control areas. And we performed this analysis to account for natural variation in the queen egg-laying pattern. So, the proportions of bee to larvae were significantly greater over deprived areas as compared to controls, which suggests a difference in nurse bee attendance between these two treatments. So we then wanted to observe individual larvae, and we observed 6 individual larvae continuously for 1 hour after cage removal. For nurse inspection, again defined as the head and thorax insertion of less than 3 seconds, and feeding defined as greater than 3 seconds. We also made further observations, such as the time to first examination, which is the time until the first observed feeding or inspection of the larva. Also, we observed the time to first feeding, the total time fed, and finally the total observed examinations. Variables were log transformed when they did not conform to constraints of normality and equal variances, and we used analyses of variance to test the variables by treatment. Data collection of my larval observations is not yet complete, and I'll be presenting the results of the first 30 minutes of observation. Replications all trended the same by treatment, and therefore we combined all reps for analyses. So, variables differed significantly by treatment in all cases. Seen here, we have deprived larvae were on average fed more than, examined, I'm sorry, more than 1 minute sooner than controls. They were also fed an average of 5 minutes more quickly. The fact that bees were examining and feeding deprived larvae sooner than controls suggests that there's some factor attracting bees to the deprived larvae and stimulating examinations and feeding. Now, deprived larvae were fed an average total of nearly 1 minute more than controls. Now, this suggests some nutritional difference between the two treatments, but a caveat to this is that since I did not observe feeding directly, it is possible that the attending bees are engaged in some other nursing-related behavior. Finally, nurses performed around 11 examinations more towards the deprived larvae than to the controls throughout the whole period of observation. Now, this could be a consequence of more bees being present near the deprived larvae, or could again be suggestive of a continuing stimulus to examine larvae even after these initial examinations have been performed. So honeybee nurses clearly make a distinction between larvae that have been deprived of contact for 4 hours versus those that have not. And now this is the first such demonstration of nurse bees actively choosing between larvae based solely on short-term rearing environment differences. So following on these results, we wanted to specifically test the hypothesis that extracts from deprived larvae induce differential nursing behaviors as compared to these control extracts. Therefore, we decided to remove the larvae and the environment from the system to see if nurses would respond to larval chemical cues alone in a bioassay. So for our bioassay, hexane extracts from 200 control and deprived larvae were collected from a single colony and